Welcome to the Hot Lava Podcast, the playoff edition. Padres gearing up to take on the Dodgers in the best of five series that starts on Saturday at Dodger Stadium. I'm Union Tribune sports editor Ryan Finley, here with Kevin Acey. Kevin, you were in the car headed to LA for workout day. How are things?
Yeah, this is how it goes when you are playing in LA and you decide, you know, I'm going to stay a night at home, but I got to get to LA, no problem. And then the day arrives and you go, LA sucks and traffic sucks and I got to be there by a certain time. Guys, can we do the podcast while I'm on the run? So I appreciate it. And then, of course, you know, yeah, here we are driving up to LA, Padres, Dodgers, third time in 5 years, Ryan, that the Padres win their 3-0 in wild card series. And their reward is to play the Dodgers. They were swept in 2020 in Texas in the COVID playoffs. And then the Padres pull off what had to be, like, I mean, one of the highlights for any living Padre fan, the win in the division series in 2022. I would ask you, there's a lot to talk about. Where do you want to start?
There's a lot to talk about. You know, I think the focus here is probably the Dodgers, but I think we'd be remiss if we didn't touch on the Padres sweeping the Braves in the wild card series. Back-to-back nights at Petco Park. First night was fairly easy. Second night, one-run game. Robert Suarez comes in and locks it up. Kevin, any takeaways and any concerns? I know it's hard to poke a hole in a team that just got that just swept somebody, but any takeaways from how they played those first two nights?
Well, obviously, your big concern would be that it's almost certain that Joe Musgrove is not pitching in this series or for the rest of the playoffs. Though I will say this, I've not talked to anyone that says Joe is out. And we know that unless the MRI yesterday, as we speak here on Friday, came back and said that his arm needed to be taken off, Joe will be fighting to be available to pitch in some capacity. But that's a concern, though, as I wrote last night, that there's not very many teams that are better equipped to move on from having what would arguably be their most dominant starter of the last month or so out. And we'll talk about that later. I am concerned about the Padres offense. I mean, here's the deal. And I would make like a big deal of it because the point at this time of the year is to win. And they won two games in the final week of the season that they needed to win, right? And, well, unless you were talking about the division and they lost the series to the Dodgers, but they won a game, first game of the series at Dodger Stadium to get in the playoffs. Then they won first game of the series in Arizona to clinch home field. Then they won their two games in the wild card series. So the Padres are accomplishing the goal of winning the games that you need to win. But I think their offense is a little bit troublesome right now. We'll see.
Yeah, it's funny. It's they're scoring in bunches. We saw both Tuesday and Wednesday, but they're going long stretches without doing much of anything offensively. Some of that probably has to do with the Atlanta Braves bullpen. It's very good, even though it's Tuesday. But some of that could be a sign of trouble ahead. Thank goodness for Kyle Higashioka. I never thought I'd be saying in October. But home runs, back-to-back nights for him. Fernando Tatis had his superstar video game cover moment by hitting the highest home run maybe I've ever seen. Jackson Merrill and Manny Machado doing their thing, driving in runs. But you're right. I mean, you know, to go four or five innings without so much as threatening to score, I think is something that probably won't beat the Dodgers.
Right. Now, here's the thing that that's it. You summed it up, what their offense has been. And it's the postseason, right? So that happens. And yes, the Braves' bullpen is their strength. And so is the Dodgers' bullpen. But just like the Padres got to the Braves starters, you absolutely see a path that the Padres can get to the Dodgers starters. They're, you know, I mean, this isn't even the Dodgers that we're looking at right now in terms of their starting pitching. So again, I'm glad that we talked about it because I do think that it is something that could pop up. But again, Manny Machado and Jackson Merrill. Manny hasn't looked good, but guess what? He did his job in was it the sixth inning? Second inning, because both he and Jackson Merrill looked terrible in their at bats in the first inning where they had loaded the bases and then didn't score. And then both guys were fantastic. I mean, Manny first pitch, and right after him, Jackson Merrill, a fantastic at bat. And they both come through. So that is the name of the game in the playoffs. So, you know, they've done it. And I see a path to them doing that against the Dodgers.
Yeah, because, again, the Dodgers are not the Dodgers. Not with two teams worth of starting pitchers on the injured list. Dodgers made a decision last night that they're going to start Yoshinobu Yamamoto in game one on Saturday. He was initially slated to go game two versus Yu Darvish. Apparently there is an issue with Jack Flaherty that it appears to be a mechanical thing. The report last night said they just wanted to take an extra couple days to work with it. This is where the once mighty Los Angeles Dodgers are at, holding their presumptive ace because they've noticed something that could not, you know, something bad with him. We're a long way removed from Clayton Kershaw and Julio Urias and pre-surgery Walker Buehler and pre-surgery Dustin May, and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. It's a very different Dodger team the Padres are facing.
Yeah, that you knew that their explanation that they wanted Yamamoto has been, you know, how he's had an extra day rest. They wanted him available in game five. And like, well, wait, this is something that just occurred to you? Like, you knew when they made that switch that there was something there. Plus, you're putting Yamamoto, who, sure, has been better lately, but the Padres jumped all over him twice earlier in the year, especially that first game, the second game in Korea, the first time they faced Yamamoto's debut. So that was weird. But yeah, then when you're talking about Jack Flaherty being your ace, I mean, Jack Flaherty, I think, gave up a run in five innings to the Padres, has a high threes ERA and whatever it is, 11 starts with the Dodgers. But this is not ace, like you mentioned, the guys that the Padres have always had to face, those be it was the 2022 NLDS, be it the 2020 DS again, and 2021 when these teams were battling for so much of the year. And it was just like every time they're lining up their best guys, Darvish, Snell, and Musgrove against Urias, Kershaw, Buehler, May. I mean, it was, Gonsolin was owning the Padres. And these guys, man, the injuries that they've sustained. So they're not going to feel sorry for the Padres. But again, their bullpen, very good. And I mean, we could spend an entire podcast on their offense.
Yeah, it's incredible. You know, the Padres, are going to have to try to find a way to get Shohei Ohtani out, putting together maybe the best offensive season since Barry Bonds. Freddie Freeman, assuming he's healthy, and I know that he's fighting something. Freddie Freeman is a top 10 player in baseball, also left-handed. Mookie Betts has been fantastic this season. This is a team that is very top-heavy, I think, Kevin. The three players who any team in baseball would take and pay out the nose for, and then kind of just some guys. You know, it's really kind of an interesting roster construction over there, don't you think?
It is, and it has been, and they have toward the end of the season. I was surprised because the Padres played them early and then played in this two-game series, and you're like, okay, now the Dodgers, you don't really see them. You saw, their numbers look pretty good. Like, oh, okay. You saw Teoscar Hernandez, but then you saw that Will Smith was struggling, but I didn't really see the depth of their lineup. And it still is very top-heavy, but you better take care of those guys, and it's not last year, or I would even argue the year before, where it was pretty – the comparison was not even anything close. You got through the top four guys before, and you were pretty, this was a pedestrian lineup. I think Tommy Edman, the San Diego kid, has really helped them in terms of them, what they can do with what the Dodgers like to do with their platoons. And what looms for you, if you're not going to turn a triple play and avoid him, is what looms for you is when you go to turn that lineup over. So if you make a mistake to the 7, 8, 9 guys, and then Shohei Ohtani's coming up with runners on base, then you're in trouble. So yes, but I still say, I think if you're talking about, we are saying that their starting pitching is not what the Dodgers of recent years have been. Well, I think their lineup is better then not only is Shohei Ohtani make it better. I mean, you talk about what, you know, it was one of the iconic moments in Padres history, Josh Hader retiring, Mookie Betts, Trey Turner, and Freddie Freeman in order. Well, this time it would have to be Robert Suarez retiring Shohei Ohtani, Mookie right. Betts, and Freddie Freeman. I mean, that's better. And then Will Smith had a big home run last week. He's still dangerous. Teoscar Hernandez, dangerous. Now we're down five guys, and I'd say those bottom four are better than what you've seen recently from the Dodgers. So, look, they say offense, and that's been one of the problems. Offense doesn't win in the generally speaking. I think this offense, the Dodgers offense, can win in the postseason.
Yeah, if you look, there are three Dodgers, Ohtani, Freeman, and Betts, who would lead the Padres in OPS. They have an OPS higher than anybody. On the Padres team, Padres top OPS guys actually Jerickson Profar as we head into this, which I think is interesting. Yeah, we talk about bullpen, you know, the Dodgers. There are a lot of guys there to make you nervous. You know, the Padres obviously encountered Michael Kopech when they were there late last month. Kopech has been a revelation for them. Sort of a, it's funny for a guy who was a starting pitcher his whole career, he sort of fits the closer mold perfectly now. You know, long hair, kind of fire-breathing guy, throws hard. You look at Blake Treinen, who's always been filthy when he's healthy. Joe Kelly, same for him. And then Daniel Hudson, a former Padre. One-time Padre, he's ageless, apparently. He's really well out of that Dodger bullpen. Padres have their work cut out for them, I think. They get later into games.
Do you look at any of these guys? I mean, maybe Flaherty gives you six. They're not, and it's true. I mean, the average over the last couple of years, I went back to be certain of it, it's less than five innings that starters go. And even on World Series winning teams, it's not much more than five innings that a starter's expected to go. And certainly the Dodgers will not be expecting out of any of their starters to go six innings. But then you're going to start lining up with Evan Phillips in the fifth or sixth inning, and it doesn't get any better from there. But you do need to jump on these starters like right away. And look, I guess there's some positive to look at. The Padres have done that. And guess what? They were doing that late in the season as well. So I see a path here, but it is a heck of a bullpen. And then it's a heck of an offense.
Right. I think it's a clearer path than the Padres might have had 2 years ago or even 3 years ago.
Yes. Oh. Yeah.
But my goodness, they have Shohei Ohtani. I mean, you know, like you got to face him again. And this is another show probably that Shohei Ohtani hits leadoff. It's just, if you were a pitcher, it just would have to be terrifying. You know, that he's been able to drive in 130 runs when you know that at least his first at bat every night, there's nobody on base to drive in. And what he has done this season is absolutely Barry Bonds level stuff, don't you think?
Yeah, I mean, it is. And as far as we know, he's doing it in a different way than Barry Bonds, who unfortunately was going to be a Hall of Famer without doing it a different way. But, you know, that's whatever. But yes, Shohei Ohtani is mind boggling, where your allegiances are. Shohei Ohtani, it's crazy. And then to, again, speaks to their lineup, because he's not driving in Freddie Freeman and Mookie Betts. So, because that would be impossible. So maybe early in the season when he was down behind Mookie, but yeah. Six for 11, no homers, but three doubles. And they were like every big hit. And then Mookie Betts was 0-for-8 in the first two games of the series, but then was 2-for-4 and had a big hit, two big double. And so you would, yes, you know what? You were going to pick your poison, and the one that you think is less lethal is Mookie Betts, but eventually Mookie Betts is going to get you. So they went in saying, we're going to pitch to Ohtani for the most part. We're going to be very careful, but what we have to do is take care of the other guys. And they did that some, but they were unable to do that some. And it is a trap to have to face Ohtani, Betts, And Freeman. And yes, Freeman, the ankle, which by the way means Luis Arraez, who for some reason was being blamed by some Dodgers fans for being the cause of Freddie Freeman hurting his ankle. So now you have Manny who will get the thunderous boos. Tatis right behind him. Profar, kind of. But I'm going to say Arraez is going to be up there in his greeting that he will get tomorrow at Dodger Stadium because they're mad at him for Freddie Freeman. So who may or may not play first base is going to play, supposedly. Maybe Max Muncy will play first and Freeman will DH. That'll change their lineup a little bit, what they're able to do in terms of platoons and later. But, you know, Freddie Freeman will probably play. And it's just a man. But you know what? Trey Turner was pretty darn good in 2022. And the Padres were able to work around that. And I don't think that they had the pitching staff that they have now. Now, Suarez and Hader were incredible in the playoffs until obviously the Phillies when Hader didn't get his shot and Suarez you know gave up the big hits. But they again, I keep saying it because I don't know what it is. Is it this, Ryan, that I've watched too many Dodgers Padres games that I feel like I got to stick up for the Padres and say, you know, they got a chance. This has been a better team than the Dodgers this year. The Padres have.
Yeah, agreed.
Not overall. The Dodgers led the majors in that with 98 wins, but the Padres won the season series 8-5.
Right. And, you know, the Padres head into this series having only played 2 playoff games so far. Mm-hmm. Their guys will be rested. Yes, they lose Joe Musgrove, but the way they line up from a starting pitching standpoint, man, I mean, that's still. They still have the better starting pitching. And, you know, if you look at it, Dylan Cease in game one. Then you go
Darvish.
Darvish. Right now, game three is TBA. Who do we anticipate pitching 3 and 4 at least?
Michael King. Why you wouldn't throw out Michael King for game 3, I don't know. And that's the real benefit of it, right? Remember last time, Joe Musgrove was pitching game 4 because he had to pitch game 3 in the wild card series in New York. So, this was a huge thing that they get to the guy that a lot of people thought should have started game 1 in the wild card series. And obviously the Padres knew best and went with Michael King, who gave him 7 shutout. But Dylan Cease, the no hitter guy, the guy who has more games this year, a half a dozen games this year in which he went at least 6 innings and gave up 1 hit or obviously one time 0 hits. That's the guy starting game 1 against Yoshinobu Yamamoto, who has gone like more than 5 innings one time in his last 6 starts. Had missed 2 months with a rotator cuff problem. The Padres are set up well. Sorry, that was a little of a side because you were going to then say game 4, Martin Perez.
Right. Well, and to me, I guess the question is could you get away with only using 3 starters in a 5-game series, right?
Yeah, you got it. That would mean a Saturday. That would mean a Saturday to Wednesday turnaround. And so there's not a reason to do that, though. You are going to pull Martin Perez at the first sign of trouble.
Yes, yes, yes. Although, you know what? There are worse guys who could start that game, too. You know, a veteran guy, a lefty. And again, you know, the Dodgers, the Dodgers' 3 best hitters are left-handed. With take away the last game in Phoenix, he's been pretty good for
them. Yep. And that was a, you know, game look. Maybe that's what they want out of him. Well, I think it was he gave up all those runs in the 4th inning, I believe. That game, I was barely paying attention. But obviously that one that the Diamondbacks had to win. Perez wasn't even sure that he was going to start. I'm not making excuses for him. I'm saying there were some other circumstances there. That is to support your point, is that guy was pretty darn good while he was with the Padres.
Yep, and he's got some playoff experience, was on that Rangers team that won a World Series, is a veteran guy who you can't imagine would be particularly intimidated by Dodger Stadium.
He's extremely confident guy. Still thinks he's got ace stuff, and that's a part of the battle when you're Martin Perez. So good for him. Like I said, no one's going to say this wasn't a potentially huge blow. Joe Musgrove has been just like outside of that one inning since he's come back, been incredibly dominant. That's what's amazing about this him leaving the other day. He'd retired 9 straight guys before leaving. He had allowed before that, I think, two runs in his previous three starts, which were all at least six innings. Like, incredible. It's a big loss, but not many teams set up like the Padres to weather a loss like that.
Right. I'd be remiss if I didn't ask you about Jackson Merrill. Any ideas that this guy would have been at all intimidated by the playoffs or wide-eyed? Went away pretty quickly. He's special. He continues to prove it, doesn't he?
Yeah, he's unbothered by things, and he's just there. And that's a part of the whole, if everyone could do that, right? This thing that they say they do where it's just a game, right? Mm-hmm. If everyone could do that, well, then a lot more people would be better at playing baseball in the major leagues and in the playoffs, right? It's like, you want to say first, like, it's silly to think that Jackson Merrill would have been intimidated. Except it happens to the best of them. Okay. It does. So it was at least something to keep an eye out. But then once you saw that, hey, this is just Jackson Merrill, and the way that he's bouncing back and still making those same kind of adjustments that he was making during the season, you're like, oh, of course he was, because it's Jackson Merrill. So the answer to your question, yes, he's special. And that's why, obviously, an incredible amount of athleticism. He didn't hear the ball off the bat that last, the first out of the ninth inning in the second game, because it was so loud there. He didn't realize it had been hit that hard. And yet you knew he was going to catch that ball, because both him and Tatis out there, not the smoothest outfielders, they're just good athletes. Incredible bat to ball skills. His power, I mean, I think he's going to have even more home runs next year. He's incredibly talented, but the big thing is what's between the ears with that kid.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you're right. And again, he talked a little bit after Wednesday's game. Supremely confident, but not in a off-putting or cocky way. They talk about the Dodgers. He's like, yeah, this is what we do. We're going to go play the Dodgers. Like, you know, there's a little cliche in there sometimes, but very much, we're going to go play our game because we like the way we match up. Right. Just
what I love about him is the cliches are like, he then plays them out. Right.
Yeah.
Like, he plays them out. So like, to him, they're not cliches. They're like, he's like, yeah, like, well, I'm just playing baseball. Like,
yeah, there's something there. And it's funny, you know, physically, obviously, I think he's sneaky big, sneaky tall, and somebody who's going to, as he fills out, become a real power threat. But there's an intangible there that I don't think a lot of players that we watch on a daily basis have. There's something there. It's like I said, I think it's special, and I think he continues to show it. And I wouldn't be surprised if Jackson Merrill came out of these playoffs as being a pretty well-known national figure in baseball, just because what you see when you watch him play.
It would be I think it would not be surprising at all if Paul Skenes is the rookie of the year and Jackson Merrill is the guy with the ring. Now, they have a long way to go. I'm not necessarily predicting a Padres World Series win right now. I'm just saying, like, that would be so classic Jackson Merrill. And that's, you know, that because that's what he's about. I've talked to you about it, other people. I don't know that Jackson Merrill is going to the Hall of Fame. I think he's the kind of guy that if you put a team around him that is capable of doing it, he's the kind of guy that lifts everyone around him. Now, in addition to being a heck of a player, then he lifts everyone around him. And it's the kind of thing where one day we're talking about how he dragged the rest of his team to the World Series or what, you know, that kind of thing. That's who Jackson Merrill is. And this is from someone who you're in this business a while, you get burned by falling in love with rookies or whatever. And so I'm as cynical as anyone. And I'm just telling you, this kid has it.
Yes, and he goes to Instructs games when it's 114 degrees out. When they were in Phoenix last week, you had a note in your Padres Daily about that. Not just anybody will go watch minor leaguers play in the heat at the end of a long season.
Yeah, that's – and then his thing is, you know, he wants to know these guys. And, you know, he knows his buddies because he was in the minor leagues just a year ago. But he wants to know these guys because they're going to be his brothers soon. And so, again, like, Jackson's very aware of what he's saying, because sometimes he does have some incredibly insightful things to say. And I'm like, 21-year-old kid didn't just think of this. He's been thinking about it. Right. But it's all feels very real as well. And look, you can say whatever you want. If you went out to Instructs, and it was climbing up north of 110 degrees while you were there, you're backing it up there.
Yeah, absolutely. Kevin, I know that you're on the road, and we should probably get you out of here, and we're butting up against our 30-minute
mark. Yeah, I got all the time in the world. I've been sitting in traffic this whole time. I mean, I might have sounded incoherent, but the things I've done to dodge traffic in Riverside County is amazing during this conversation.
I know that the playoffs are different, and you go to a ton of baseball games every year. Shoot, nearly 200 a year. I guess this is my on-the-spot question for you today. Is there something different about playoff games at Petco Park? And was there anything where you were sort of looking around being like, oh, this is kind of cool at some point Tuesday or Wednesday?
Yes. I always try to be too honest with you and get myself in trouble. It's a great crowd, man. And the way that the Padres fans have responded, both, I mean, in numbers for sure. And then in the support that they have is it's incredible. You couldn't even recognize it from previous years. And I don't think, I think I went to one playoff game. It was during Chargers time when they were making it in the 2000s. And I was covering other teams before, and the Padres don't go to the playoffs much. So, and I can't make an apples to apples comparison, but I can tell you this, that like, it's a much more sophisticated crowd. I still am a little cynical about, is it Philadelphia? No, it is not. So don't be using the word best with me. Don't be, you know, don't be telling, but it's incredible how bigger and how in the big moments, how loud it gets. I would like to see it maybe a little more sustained sometimes. That's the difference between here and some of the incredible parks where, guess what? Those fans have been going to playoff games like almost every year for 50 years. But it's really mind-boggling. And I got to tell you, I love the organic moments. So there were two Beat LA chants, and the second one was prompted by on the scoreboard. Mm-hmm. But the first one was not even 1 minute after the game was over, the crowd spontaneously broke into Beat LA.
Yeah.
I love that. That is what is on the minds of Padres fans. I love that. It's why I loved all the small things when they played it the first time in 2022 during the rain delay. That was organic. The Padres fans rallied around that. There's more moments like that that stand out to me that I really give a lot of credit to the Padres fans. And then, of course, I give credit to the Padres for building a team that has brought this out in a town that is desperate for a championship.
Yeah, I was struck, and I was out there sitting a couple people over from you Tuesday and Wednesday. I was struck, number one, by how few Braves fans I saw. Now, to fly cross country on 12 hours notice to watch a baseball game, right? That would have been tough, but I was also surprised when you talk about there's some savvy there. You're right. I mean, when Joe Musgrove left with an elbow injury, you could almost hear people kind of whispering to themselves and the people with them for a couple innings. And I mean, I thought that really cast a pall over the whole game. And to me, that's the mark of sophistication, right? You look at it and you go, not only is this Joe Musgrove, but this is Grossmont High's Joe Musgrove. I think he's sort of every San Diego native's favorite Padre, probably, just because he's a local guy and there's nothing San Diegans love more than talking about how great San Diego is. I was really struck by how, I don't know, had you told 14-year-old me that the Padres would have made the playoffs for the third time in 5 years and that I'd have to get to the ballpark 2.5 hours early because the traffic's so bad, I'm not sure I would have believed you. You know, what they've
and you're the guy who was there for those 96, 98. You were, sure. You know, you were living it then. So you can speak to that. I was covering the Indians and the Yankees in the playoffs during those times. So,
wow. Really?
you'd go to places to write about them. The Padres were really a big national. That's what I root for here for San Diegans is that their team
a huge national brand?
Is that their team is with the Tatises, with the Merrills, obviously the Machado, that they become that so that Padres fans can be maybe more focused just on, you know, their team and all that, and not that they're being slighted by national.
I know exactly what that is. And it's funny, they talk about the dragon up the freeway, and certainly when you spend like the Dodgers spend, that's a well-deserved nickname. That said, you know, the Padres aren't necessarily the little sisters of the poor either. You know, they've got superstars of their own. And I think when we talk about this series coming up, Kevin, what I'm going to be looking forward to the most is to see which superstars on either team really step up in these big moments.
Because that's kind of what it is about. I mean, like Tatis this last series, right? Like, it's all behind you now, right? Whatever has happened this past season, previous seasons, the playoffs is the moment, right? Like Shohei Ohtani, 50-50, whatever. The playoffs is the, especially for the or the Dodgers. I got to say, like, all that money, and look, they have had a preposterous, I'm not in their front office at all. But like all that money and like they've got an asterisk World Series. Like, I mean, that's a lot of pressure.
Yeah, no, I agree. I agree. And again, you wonder if changes will be made if the Dodgers say lose in the division series to the Padres. The people who own that team are used to getting a return on investment. And they've spent a lot of money and not seen a whole lot in terms of rings for their money here in the last decade or so.
Yeah, that is so, and I'm not saying that it's a rounding error for them, but those are also some really rich people.
Very rich people. And they have Shohei Ohtani
that owns that team. And they're printing money as based on anecdotally what I've seen when I've been up there. It's remarkable. Not to mention they're paying him $2 million right now, and the rest of it is in some escrow account or something. I don't know exactly how that works, but they are printing money. But you know what's interesting about the Dodgers is, and you, whenever you lose and you're not expected to, and then you have the time, right, which both gives you clarity and allows you to create narratives, their narrative now is they haven't had enough urgency,
right?
And especially in that 22 series. And it's like, you know, I think there's probably some validity to that, as ridiculous as it is. It's like, there's probably some urgency to that. That probably felt bigger to the Padres than it did to the Dodgers. Again, I said that's kind of ridiculous since it was the playoffs. But the Dodgers thought they were going to come in here and advance, right? The plucky Padres had won their little world, their little wild card series, right, against the Mets. And the Padres were geeked, man. And they were, the Dodgers were not. Well, it happened again the next year against the Diamondbacks. So now they're talking about it like they got to match the intensity of the Padres. It's like, oh, okay. Well, I'm glad you're thinking of that 12 years in.
Right. It's funny. I mean, and lack of urgency is code for they won the division by too many games and got complacent because they're so good during the regular season, you know?
Yeah. The truth is that as I drive through Pomona, Ryan, the last part, you sounded like the adults on the Peanuts movie. I couldn't hear what you said, but I'm sure that it was brilliant. And we can end there because who knows what, if you can even understand me now as I, again, drive to, like, honestly, a beautiful, beautiful ballpark and the view from the press box, incredible. But like going to Los Angeles, I would rather that this series was in Seoul, South Korea.
Well, this is a good place to stop, I think. Padres Dodgers National League Division Series, best of five, starting Saturday at Dodger Stadium. Kevin, looking forward to reading your stuff, looking forward to seeing how this series plays out. That'll do it for this episode of the Hot Lava Podcast. For Kevin Acey, I'm Ryan Finley. I'll see you next time.